to continue with some of the themes that Ajahn Pasmo began with yesterday. The whole basis of meditation and the kind of training that we're undertaking is, has many, many dimensions to it. But, one of the fundamental elements of the basis of meditation is this balancing of effort, energy, and that of peacefulness or relaxation. So, particularly at the beginning of a retreat or the beginning of any period of formal meditation, sitting or walking even, it's very helpful, useful to be bringing attention to that balance of qualities. And certainly, at the beginning of a sitting, the beginning of a retreat, and particularly where we've had a lot of attention being drawn by the world of activity, the mental world, things that we have had to take care of, and communication, and responsibilities, then it's very easy to get lost into a kind of abstracted mental realm. And even the meditation can become something that we sort of abstract as an idea. The practice becomes something that's sort of off in our kind of imagination. We create an idea of how we want ourselves to be or what we want to do and inflate that idea. Give out a lot of attention and bring it to life, and not realizing that we're actually just kind of inhabiting a mental realm. And we haven't actually contacted the reality of our present moment, the qualities of life, of reality as we experience it here and now. But we're off in the realm of sort of my practice or my retreat or what I'm interested in. You know, so even though it might be innocent enough in some respects, it's much more important if we want to really establish the basis of meditation in a skillful way to begin always by focusing the attention on the body, on the posture, whether it's, you know, sitting down at the beginning of a period of sitting meditation or standing at the end of the path for walking meditation, or whatever, you know, or even any of the changing the postures as we stand or as we walk or as we lie down. But particularly with these formal practices of sitting, walking, to bring the attention fully and completely into the body, just to really cultivate the body as a reference point. To keep that very much within the sphere of our attention. When we look at our experience, particularly if we have our eyes closed, then we can begin to notice that, you know, that there is a space of a mental space. There's this internal realm of our experience. The space of knowing or awareness, and then within that space there is a variety of experiences that arise, take shape and dissolve. So we can call that a sound, we can call it a sight, we can call it a feeling in the body, we can call it a memory, a perception. But all these different forms take shape within the sphere of our awareness. So to really establish a quality of true mindfulness and attunement to Dhamma, then The most helpful way of doing that is establishing that attunement through mindfulness of the body, letting the body be placed at the very center of that sphere of awareness, that space of knowing. So that it, when we meditate on the body, say we have our eyes closed right now, we can say there's a feeling of the weight of the body, it's feelings of warmth or cool, the sensations of the clothing on our skin, the air entering and leaving the body, and feelings of fullness or hunger, or all the 10,000 different textures of feeling. But we experience these within the space of knowing. So to establish mindfulness of the body is to really place that cluster, that constellation of feelings, of experiences, right at the very center of attention. Let the body be the heart of our experiential world. So we deliberately place it there and attend to the body, attend to the feelings that arise from the body, the presence of the presence of the body, and the perceptions that come through it, all the different kind of multiplicity of forms, whether we experience it as energy or heat and cold or different textures, each one of us is going to be different. But to establish mindfulness of the body is to say, okay, well, the beginning of this sitting, to establish a posture, the walking meditation, rather than kind of looking at the pathway or the kind of the trees or the things around me. Right now, just let this feelings of the body be right here at the very center of attention. I often use the example of being the center of a mandala. If you imagine the space of awareness being a kind of spherical space, then the heart of that mandala of knowing, the place there, the feelings of the body. Oftentimes we think of meditation as a mental activity, understandably enough, and the body is a kind of appendix to the mental work of meditation. But any of us, all of us who've done even a little bit of meditation practice, we very quickly realize how radically the body and the mind affect each other. They feed into each other constantly. So the state of the mind affects the body, the state of the body affects the mind. So one of the reasons why we need to emphasize this mindfulness of the body consciousness, particularly at the beginning of a retreat or the beginning of a meditation period, is because the attention so easily just sort of drops the body or marginalizes it and gets to the mental world, much more interesting. Concentration on this or different emotions or thoughts, human perceptions arising. Much more colourful, interesting, rather than sort of neutral sensation of cloth on your shoulder. Or the feeling of not being any temperature, it's either too hot or too cold, ordinary temperature. These are not exciting stimuli. So to bring attention to the body is needed, because unless we're in pain, usually the attention won't go there on its own. But the body is the surefire connector to the present moment. The mind can go off and can create ideas of the future or the past, and can go off and inhabit those imaginary realms. But the body only exists here in the present. It doesn't live anywhere else. So if we want to establish a mindfulness of the present moment, then your absolutely surefire connected to that is the body. And it's a no-brainer, really. But often we miss that. We don't see how valuable body consciousness, body awareness is in being being the basis for that attunement to the present. So that if we establish a habit, we cultivate a habit of attending to the body, getting familiar with it, then we start to notice the qualities that are embodied within, so that we are no longer the mind, the mental states being unconsciously affected or fed into by the way the body is. We're aware of both of those influences. So we need to tilt in the direction of paying attention to the body, because the attention won't go there naturally. But when we do bring that in, then we begin to see, maybe we're finding ourselves worrying about something, we're anxious. And the attention is going to the details of the thing that we're anxious about. And we haven't noticed that actually that the body is in a tense state, and so that we stop worrying about one thing and then immediately start worrying about another, and then another, and then another. So in this kind of instance, just by bringing the attention briefly to the body and saying, oh, look at that, my body's really tense, my belly is all tight. The anxiety is being sustained, generated even, from the habit of the body, and just choosing different mental objects to worry about, worrying about the, our health, or worrying about the food, or worrying about the weather, or worrying about the past, or other people. It's just a kind of wandering worry. So just to bring the attention into the body, to notice what are we carrying here. And so it's easy to get complacent with it, but I find it's always helpful just to begin every sitting. This is something also Ajahn Chah would recommend highly to people, just at the beginning of every sitting, spend a few minutes going through the body from the head down to the feet. Go to every corner of the body, see what we brought into the room with us, see what we're carrying with us. Just to notice, what's the effect of that? When we see that, say that, just using the example of tension, we find that the jaw is clamped, or the eyes are scrunched up, or the shoulders are tight. The chest is closed, the stomach is rigid. Just to notice that, to take the trouble to sweep through the body, notice those feelings. Oh, look at that, well, why are my teeth clenched? And then what I also like to recommend is that rather than just sort of changing that by an act of will, just to let the attention rest with that texture, that feeling for a period of time. Just, you find that the teeth are clenched, just kind of stay with that. Don't immediately just sort of open your mouth. But just notice that. How does that feel? Or the eyes scrunched up, or the hands tight. How does that feel? And then just let the discomfort of the imbalance, the unbalanced nature of the experience be the thing that guides the response, so that the very presence of awareness, like drawing that very feeling into the center of attention and letting that attention be brought to bear upon that sensation. And then rather than a change being brought about by an egoic act, like I'm deciding to relax this, and just witness what happens when that's really held within full awareness, what goes on. And 9 times out of 10, what I find is that on its own you find the belly relaxing, the eyes soften, the back straightens. Because it's also not just a matter of working in this way when it's to do with tension, obviously, even if the body is in a kind of dull, heavy state, gloomy, or some sort of distortion in the posture through lack of energy, then what we find is that you bring your attention into the body, you notice that the back is hunched over, the body is drooping. And then rather than kind of knees sitting up straight as a kind of an egoic, ego-centered reaction to that, noticing that slump, then just let the body stay in that posture and hold that in awareness, just being attentive to that. And then that very slackness, that very distortion, it on its own, just the sheer power of wise attention has its effect. And we find that without me doing anything, we start to see how the body will just straighten. The spine reaches upwards and the body adjusts itself to a more energized, upright posture. So we're trusting the wisdom of this being, trusting the wisdom of the body and the mind to bring things into balance. This is like the balancing principle of the Dhamma itself. If there's enough wisdom, if there's enough awareness, then that the very nature of our own heart, our own being, will be the corrective quality, the corrective agent. So this is a whole theme that probably we'll be revisiting over and over during the retreat, but just to develop a sense for this, and if it's something that you can't understand what on earth this is talking about, then just to experiment and see if you can get a feel for this, because it's not as though meditation has to be a thing that I am doing. We look upon it in that way from a sort of relativistic point of view, like I come here, I do this retreat, I meditate, as a convenient way of talking about it. But actually, in essence, we don't meditate in order to meditate. The forms and structures of meditation are there in order to bring about the cessation of dukkha, to end dukkha, to end suffering. So that it's not what we're doing here on this retreat is not just like a kind of set of behaviors that we're learning and training ourselves to just adopt. But what we're trying to do is simply use these forms of the precepts, the routine, the meditation techniques, so forth, to awaken to and tap into those dimensions of our dimension of our being, that quality of our own heart and mind, which is awake, which is pure, which is both perfectly peaceful and perfectly alert. So with the posture, as we find developing it in this way, working with the body, we begin to feel directly this balancing of energy and realization. Like say you find the body is kind of slumped over, and then you bring that into awareness, and then let the body straighten, the spine stretches and reaches, and then to then with the spine as the central column, a central pillar, just to let the rest of the body relax completely around that. And so often we think of effort and relaxation as being kind of diametrically opposed to each other, and in the way they are, like the in-breath and the out-breath. But they're also parts, equal parts of a greater whole. So what we're doing with with training the posture, using the sitting posture, walking posture, and so forth, meditation as a basis for meditation, is that we're using the body, the mind, to allude to tap into that dimension of our being which is both perfectly awake, alert, energized, and yet perfectly peaceful. And we begin to find that, yeah, when we develop the meditation, develop the posture, that we find, yeah, the body can be both perfectly energized, alert, and completely relaxed at the same time. The two coexist. They don't oppose each other. They're opposite qualities, but they're not in conflict with each other, like in a tree or a plant. You know, it needs a certain degree of strength and rigidity in order to be able to stand upright, to be able to reach into the air. A plant has to have a certain firmness. But if it's totally rigid, stiff, then it's going to be broken by any kind of breeze or wind, any kind of thing that knocks it. It's just going to splinter it, break it, so that every plant has to have a degree of pliability, of softness. So that, you know, are the hardness and the softness at war with each other in a tree or in a plant? No, they obviously, it's ridiculous. They collaborate. They are both there. Both its bendability and its firmness. They both have their role to play. And they can coexist perfectly harmoniously. So similarly, we find in ourselves, and this isn't something that we have to kind of conjure up, it's actually natural to us, it's intrinsic within our own being. We can find that balancing point where the body is both alert, energized, and completely relaxed. There's complete peacefulness. So that just as the if we're holding fear or anxiety or restlessness in the body, and that then spills over to affect the mental realm, so too if the body is has been established in this balance of energy and relaxation, of alertness and peacefulness, then in exactly the same way that spills over into the mental realm too. Often I think of the mind and body like two interconnected water tanks, which is probably a good analogy for Vaigiri, with a great complex of water systems here. But it's as if, you know, if the two tanks are connected and the stoppers are open between them, that if you are emptying out one tank, then it's going to be filled up from the other one. So if we're busy working on the mind, trying to let go of our sort of restless, anxious thoughts, because the mind is connected to the body, if the body is in an agitated state, then it's going to keep priming the mental world for more agitation. The two are connected. And so similarly, if the body is in a state of energization and peacefulness, both completely relaxed and perfectly alert, energetic, then that too is going to affect the mind in exactly the same way. So that we find that working with the posture, making the effort to see where there are those imbalances, the slumping or the tensions or the agitations of different kinds, and letting the power of wise attention balance things out. Take a few minutes to do that at the beginning of each meditation period goes a long way to then establishing the basis for concentration, for calm, to be able to be formed. We're kind of creating encouraging the most favorable environment for the work that needs to be done. Rather like in the kitchen, we do the washing up in the morning after breakfast, before the cooking starts, so that you know that all the stuff is the old sort of stuff is cleaned away, so that when the next job is due to begin, you have to wait a whole pile of sort of dirty cups and old packets of this and that and the other, and trays covered in drips of tea and so forth. You've got clean open surfaces to work with. Obviously, the traffic goes in both directions. So that, you know, the mind affects the body affects the mind. So that, you know, just that very act of attending to the body, the way and bringing the sense of caring, wise attention to the body is a mental act. So we see. We experience and get to know for ourselves how these two pieces interrelate. Now, also we've been saying that I think it's worth reiterating again how at the beginning of a retreat, oftentimes the mind states that we experience, or the kind of way that the world appears, can be pretty ragged and agitated, busy. We're still tired from you know, doing too many things, tying up too many loose ends before the retreat began. Just all of the different tasks and things that we've all been involved in. And not having done so much formal meditation. So, of course, there's going to be a lot in the way of kind of disorganized, scrappy, erratic mind state. You know, we haven't been in retreat for very long, so it's really crucial to establish the right attitude. And just as we train, work with the body with an attitude of friendliness, befriending our own body, bringing kind, wise, loving attention to the body. But similarly, you know, to treat our own minds with that kind of respect and friendliness, that kind of caring attention. So even if it is pretty unruly or kind of disgusting or ignoble or wild or all over the place, or just sort of blurry, nondescript mediocrity, whatever it might be, just to make the point to be receiving the states of mind, regardless of what they are, whether they are very noble and bright and beautiful, or whether they're just different clusterings of the hindrances in different forms, to establish that quality of caring attention, of my readiness to receive this. Okay, this is what's happening now. This is kind of agitation, or this is irritation, this is judgmentalism, this is busyness, this is dullness, this is fearfulness, this is, you know, doubt and hopelessness. Just to, not that we are trying to make ourselves like these kind of conditions or pretend that they are desirable, but just particularly at the beginning of a retreat where we have not necessarily established a very strong momentum of formal practice, to make the emphasis of the task that of cultivating loving kindness, cultivating acceptance, respectfulness to all the different states that arise, whether we want them or don't want them, regardless. That's the point. To the exercise is that, right now it's like this. So this bears reiterating, and it gets said over and over again. But the power of of actually taking the trouble to do this is very, very great. When we don't set that intention, when we are more readily prone to believing in our moods, buying into the judgments of this is bad, this is terrible, useless. Then we're not really practicing. We've bought into that mood. We've believed that thought. We've kind of been sold on the advertising. Yeah, it's easy enough to do. The habits in us are very strong to do that. But to help establish the basis for practice and to allow the efforts that we make in meditation to really go as deeply as possible to create the conditions for a clear quality of focus and commitment to the practice. There's the wholehearted establishment of this quality of respectfulness, acceptance is tremendously important. And a refusal that goes along with that is a refusal to believe in the content of our thoughts. The random judgments that the thinking mind makes, praising this and criticizing that, opinionating about ourselves or the people around us or the world outside, just to withhold that kind of readiness to jump in and believe it or empower it, and just to hear it, to receive it, to accept it, but to not be swayed by it, not to not believe the stories that all of that tells. If we want to establish focus and concentration, then it's really necessary to not be believing in all of our thinking, and just to be able to just hear it, receive it, know it, and let it go. To not bestow attention upon it, to not believe in the tale that it's telling. Not because every single idea might be erroneous or is erroneous, but just there's so much of it that it is beside the point, and a lot of it is kind of this habitual judgment and thought creation that has no meaning, no value at all. So, with the beginning of a retreat and establishing the practice, as the mind chases off into different moods, thoughts and feelings, assessments of ourselves or other people, just to receive that with an open heart, to listen to it and let it go. Then not reject it, to not grab hold of it, but to know this is another thought form, this is another wave of emotion, this is a mood, this is a judgment, an opinion. It feels like this. It comes, it goes, it changes. I need to grab hold and I need to push away. And as Ajahn Pasana was stressing yesterday, it helps enormously during the course of a sitting or walking meditation just to bring the attention back to the body every so often. Maybe we've sort of done our 3 minutes of body sweeping at the beginning of the sitting, and then 15 minutes later on we're kind of busy working with the concentration. And we don't notice that a whole kind of weight of fear has clustered in our gut, or a knot of impatience is there in our forehead. Our teeth are clenched up again. So it can help just every few minutes, every so often, just come back. And just when you notice the mind has been carried away by some thought or some mood, notice that. Okay, so rather than immediately just sort of going back to the breath or trying to re-establish your concentration, it's like, okay, just take a moment to look at the body. Where's the body now? Yeah, how tight are the shoulders? What are my knees doing? What are my hip joints doing? What are my hands like? Where's my back? Just taking a few seconds, 15, 20, 30 seconds, a minute, just to check the body out. And 99 times out of 100, I find when I do this, it's like, oh, look at that, the back is twisted, or that hip joint is tight, or the jaw is clenched again. Uh-huh. And in exactly the same way, just let the power of attention rest upon that area. Don't do anything, just let the capacity of that wise attention just have its own effect. And notice, okay, the body straightens, relaxes, opens. Okay, back to the meditation object once again. Once things are balanced out. Also just to remember that just to include everything. It's easy for us to sort of label certain things as mind states that need to be let go of, and then other things that arise, well, they're real, so they should be believed in, like, you know, my expectations or my plans or my my judgments of this other person, judgments of myself, assessment of a state. Just to bear in mind that everything is included in that which should not be, in that which should not be clung to. Just notice how easy that happens, that certain things we just believe in and go along with without a moment's hesitation. Just to say, oh, this too, this judgment, this is another thing which arises and ceases, let go of it. And we find that there's a direct relationship. The more that we expand the range of what is included within that, which is to be known, to be received, accepted, and let go of, that the heart finds that much more stability, peace and stability, that much more easily. Capacity to focus, the capacity to concentrate, is almost directly related, proportional to the degree to which we are not drawn in by our moods, our judgments, our opinions, our ideas. Just to keep everything within that same embrace, that scope, just include it all. To notice it, see it, feel it, let it go. And go back to the meditations again.